Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hello.
And in the booth, we have the very talented Jack Inslee on sound effects and music and pretty much everything else. He's just keeping everything together. Today's show, we are very excited to be here with the ladies extraordinaire from Edible Manhattan, Gabrielle Langholz, who is the editor, and Rachel Wharton, who
Hello.
Is the deputy editor.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Not the Joe Biden.
Not yet. Well, maybe.
We have to come up with another thing.
Stay tuned for a live broadcast on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Stay tuned for a live broadcast on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Of Edible Manhattan, which just came out.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Happy Monday to everybody out there, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer, Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everybody.
My husband, my new husband, Patrick Martins, is also joining us today. And today, the topic of our show is just very mildly cheese-related. Today, we're going to be talking about the Red Hook Criterium, which is an amazing bike race and road race, actually, that takes place in Red Hook, Brooklyn once a year. It happened last Saturday, March 24th, and it was a really, really amazing event. So we have Joe DiNoto in studio with us to talk a little bit about this event and what it's all about, because it's a pretty amazing thing. We actually got involved because we donated some cheeses for the winners' gift baskets, which I was very honored to do, because these athletes are pretty spectacular. Well, welcome, Joe.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thanks for coming. So can you tell us a little bit about the Red Hook Criterium and how you got involved with the race?
Sure. The Red Hook Criterium is basically an unsanctioned road race that Dave Trimble started doing about 5 years ago in Red Hook.
We're in Bushwick.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
It started out with about 20 of his friends just doing a cycling race. They would shut down the streets on their own illegally and hold the event on his birthday historically.
Uh-huh.
And it just started to grow. Every year, more and more people would find it interesting and get involved and want to race. And now it's become one of the top races in the country for the underground kind of pro urban athlete scene.
That's amazing. So how many participants were there in this year's competition?
I think we had 200 runners and 100 cyclists.
That's Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
And coming from where? All over the country?
Italy, Spain, all over the U.S., a lot of New Yorkers. But he's got a legacy in his family for the cycling industry. His uncles and his father pioneered the carbon fiber frame. They were all engineers and architects. And they just got into the cycling world and kind of like broke ground.
Wow.
So he's got a significant background in cycling. And he races himself.
Okay. So I was going to ask you, who is David Trimble? But so he's long history in the bike industry.
Yeah,
racer. And kind of, he seemed like a really fun, crazy guy.
He is crazy. There's a lot of things I didn't realize about him until I started working with him. But he's extremely competitive and it's a family thing. All his brothers, his sister, they all race competitively in different aspects of cycling. His sister Hannah does like downhill mountain biking, but like for real kind of stuff. Like she finished a race with a broken neck once. And actually, she told me this story a couple of weeks ago. Crossing the finish line, there was a jump and she passed out in midair from the broken neck that happened 10 minutes into the race off a drop off. She finished the race anyway. When she came to, she was on the ground and she had paramedics all over her. And all she was saying was, drag me across the finish line, drag me across the finish line. And then when she was being airlifted to the hospital, she was like, did I win? She didn't care about anything else except the competition.
Oh, my God.
And this transcends the entire family.
Yeah.
His father, Trimble's father, ran in the running race and then cycled in the cycling race on year's criterium.
Wow.
Hardcore.
That is super hardcore. And New York-based family or?
Some of them are from Alaska, I think.
Oh, that's hardcore in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I'm not exactly sure where they're from. I never got that far in the conversation.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that movie, like the O'Doyle Rules. I forget what movie that was.
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison, yeah. Thank you. But, you know, much more, yeah. Much more gutsy. The display of, you know, athleticism that we saw on Saturday night was just really impressive.
For the lead runner to finish at 13:57, a 5K is amazing. It just shows you the level of competition that we're dealing with this event and how far it's gotten.
Wow, 13:57.
For a 5K.
Wow. And for the women's finish, was it separated? I know the cycling race wasn't separated. Like, there wasn't a separate one for women. Was the running race same thing? Everybody goes all at the same time?
Everybody ran at the same time, but the genders were scored separately.
Okay.
So I think the women's finisher was, I want to say somewhere around 15 minutes.
Wow.
But I mean, she was booking.
She was hauling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Now tell us about the venue, because that's actually another funny tie-in that I didn't really realize until, you know, we started talking more about the race.
The Port Authority Cruise Terminal?
Yes.
Well, originally, like I was saying, Dave would do it on the streets, kind of on the fly. He would plan a course, and then as it started to grow, he realized he had to go legit and get the permits and everything else. And the cruise terminal was just ideal because of that hairpin 180 that he developed. And then the remainder of the course, it just seemed to work well for what he was trying to do and the kind of technical course he wanted to create. I mean, you do have straightaways where you could get some speed built up, and then it cuts right back into a turn almost every time. So it's just about challenging the cyclist and creating something that's dynamic and kind of one unique and one of a kind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So as far as cruising the cruise terminal, I think it was just a matter of keeping it local in Red Hook and finding a place where it would work.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, it's pretty cool because, you know, our warehouse is like a block away from where this race happened. And so all week I was kind of like trying to imagine in my head. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Just out there, like in the parking lot behind this like weird old abandoned building, you know?
It created a different identity, I think. Once that the people started to show up, you started to feel the energy build and it almost transformed that area into something that was unrecognizable.
Yeah. It was really special. Well, I feel that way about a lot of Red Hook. You don't really feel like you're in New York. It's a really special neighborhood, and it's like it has a really great sort of amazing energy.
The detachment is nice. I mean, I've only been there since I've been working with them, and was blown away walking around and just feeling that kind of separation from everything that you know about New York and what you assume New York is, and it's completely unique.
Yeah,
I could live there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like more things, you know, you can get away with more in Red Hook than you can in some other parts of New York.
Yeah, it's a little wild west.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, do you have any idea how you go about getting a permit for something like that? And do you have to create a proposal and submit it to the city? I mean, how do you phrase that in a safe way?
I can actually relate it. I used to be an architect, and I feel like it's like going for any kind of construction permit. You have to lay out a plan.
Yeah.
And you have to have every aspect of that plan kind of detailed and explained in a way that can be presented to a board, I'm sure. I wasn't involved in this process. I came on later in the game, but just from my experience and what I heard them talking about and stuff, it feels like you have to put together a proposal written and visual describing safety, human safety, egress paths, everything to provide the city or town with all the information you can.
Sure.
About what you're doing, how many people, like safety issues are the priority.
Well, and yeah, that needs to be a priority because as we witnessed, you know, we saw our fair share of wipeouts. There was some really, you know, gruesome looking falls that night.
I heard one guy broke an arm, and then the other story that was floating around was that somebody's fork just snapped in half in one of the crashes, which means it was pretty intense.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw one guy come into the finish. He was literally 100 feet from the finish line and totally crashed. He got tangled up with another bike, and there were sparks, on the pavement. I was like, holy moly.
Well, hopefully everybody's all right, but I got stuck by the terminal itself doing course marshalling, so I didn't get to see the finish and the hairpin turns and everything, but it was still exciting from my point of view.
Yeah.
You know, falls, though.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, so just a little bit about the course. So it was about 3/4 of a mile, as I understand.
0.77, yeah.
0.77. And included one really scary hairpin turn. And the racers all had to complete 24 laps.
For a 30K, yeah.
For 30K. And the rules were if you got lapped, you were eliminated.
Right. That applied only for cycling, not for running. But it's a way to just kind of create a safer competition. This way, anybody that falls off, usually it's survival of the fittest, essentially. And it creates a more intense dynamic with the lead pack as they get closer to the end.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a safety thing, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you couldn't have, like, tangles of bikes going around those turns.
Because as people fatigue, that slower pace becomes, it's like being on a highway and somebody's going 20 miles an hour. It's just very dangerous.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. So the winner was Daniel Chabanoff.
Yeah.
Do you know about anything about his background or where he's from?
I have a couple friends that have been roommates with him and stuff like that, but I'm kind of new to the realm. Mm. And my game is mostly running.
Okay.
So the cycling thing is, this is my first exposure to the competitive edge of that.
Yeah.
You know, but I've heard about him. I'm from the Lower East Side, and a couple of my friends are messengers, and they're very linked to the pros because a lot of the messengers just kind of come up.
Mm.
And, the crit is part of that process sometimes.
Okay. You know?
So I feel like from what I heard about him, he's just always been extremely fast. That's all I can really say.
He won. I want to say he was out in the lead by like almost probably 30 seconds at the end.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
I mean, he pulled it off right away and then maintained, dropped back a bit at one point because I remember thinking, oh, the pack's catching up, but then blew it wide open at the end. I'm sure he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the strategy.
Definitely. I'm like trying to look for the results. I'm on the website here. By the way, if any of our listeners want to look it up, you can just Google Red Hook Criterium, and they've got a great website, and they've got a photo blog as well. That's really fun.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I didn't want to interrupt, but I really appreciated seeing on that very small course how the pack system works. Because even though they might not be in the front pack, guys in the second pack were racing against each other. And then anyone who was in the race still and who had not been lapped was a serious rider. You know, even though they might have gotten past a few things later. Anyway, I just really admired seeing that. And my question to you is, does cycling have a hierarchy like tennis where people are ranked like I'm 500th in the world? Or and where would these guys be ranked, do you think, like if that winner was at the Tour de France? Would he compete in that as well?
I'm not 100% familiar with that, but I would assume that that's a completely different type of race. Mm-hmm. And maybe, but again, that kind of exceeds my knowledge of the sport at this point. But I'm sure there is a ranking system of sorts. But yeah, I think it's like with this race in particular, it's bragging rights. Mm-hmm. And it's about, it's finishing first, of course, is an amazing accomplishment. I think finishing period gives you bragging rights.
Yeah.
You know, with this particular type of race.
Yeah.
You know, Trimble created something very unique. And I think that's why it draws such an international crowd and attention and fan base. I mean, I was hanging out in the office during the week, and you just had guys stopping in just to say hello to him that have come from San Fran and Italy and Spain and all this other stuff. They're just cruising around Red Hook checking it out. And it's kind of like the Mecca, you know?
Yeah.
It's a big draw.
So I looked up the results for the cycling race, and so yeah, Dan Chabanov came in at 43 minutes and 53 seconds, basically. Then Rainer Schrafer was second, Evan Murphy was third, Zach Felpel was fourth, and Colin Strickland was fifth. And then there's actually a woman up on the leaderboard as well, which I was wondering about, because I was like, you can't tell who's who in their cycling outfits. But a woman named Casey Manderfield finished in 44 minutes and 3 seconds, or yeah, 44 minutes, 3 seconds, which
I wish Trimble was here for this part, because I do believe that she won a previous crit, maybe the first one.
Wow.
But again, I'm new to the criterium.
Sure.
So I'm not 100% sure I could back that up. But I know 1 year a girl did win, and I do believe it was her.
That's badass.
Yeah, wow. She's pretty badass in general. She's on the flyer, I think, for the cycling portion.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken. I hope I'm not screwing that up.
No, well, at any rate, she deserves some major props, because I didn't see many women.
I think,
you know,
there were two.
Okay.
And one of the other ones was a good friend of mine, this girl, Jessie Zappo. She runs with New York City Bridge Runners, and she's heavily into the cycling scene and running scene. And she was nervous all week, but I think she did really well, and everybody's really proud of her.
That's awesome.
It's a major accomplishment, I think, for a girl to even hang with that crowd. And I think everybody did an amazing race that night.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. So yeah, is there much overlap between the? I mean, in terms of like training, like do the cyclists and the runners like? You know, sort of, do many people do both, or is it kind of a separate?
There's definitely a spectrum. A lot of people that do the urban running scene and whatnot are definitely into cycling. The level at which they participate in one or the other varies. But a lot of my friends are doing both, mostly recreational type of cycling. But I mean, we do kind of like, I mean, there's a lot of alley cats going on and stuff like that. That's completely unsanctioned, off the radar. Planned out courses through the city at night, checkpoints and different types of themes. Like there's a Thanksgiving one where they go into supermarkets and grab canned goods, and then they have to go from point A to point B with them and drop them off for charities and stuff like that. So,
oh wow,
it's kind of this subculture cool. That I didn't even know existed until maybe 9 months ago when I started my running crew. And got introduced to all these other people that were already doing these things, and it just kind of blew my mind. You know, it's just amazing what goes on that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so that answers a question, because we were like alley cats. We were kind of, you know, reading up on different races that happen around the city and, you know, bike culture in general, and the alley cats was mentioned. So that's these unsanctioned races that you were telling about where people just kind of go around and...
Yeah, it's just, I mean, they vary too with their styles and what they're about, but it's just kind of like no permits, no permission. Very dangerous at times, you know.
Kind of just out with traffic and everything and just, going crazy.
Yeah, pretty crazy. And again, it's the same type of guys competing in these things. Extremely fast messengers, some urban athletes, some pros, you know. It's just all for fun.
And that's a really specific kind of race, because to be able to ride your bike on the streets in New York and ride fast,
yeah,
you really have to have that muscle memory of just having done, you know, been weaving in traffic, you know, every day for however many years. You know, I would imagine a professional racer that's used to riding on a track, they could be the fastest person on a track, but to get in the streets like that then, you know, is a pretty...
And be able to anticipate, you know,
different
everything
thing.
That's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of technique involved in street riding in New York, and... You really have to be aware of everything around you. It's almost like seeing 12 steps ahead at any time.
Yeah.
And anticipating movement and cars and traffic and everything. It's intense and very dangerous, but exhilarating.
Yeah.
You know, even like I'll ride at night. It's very non-competitive, not at any level at these guys, as these guys are doing. But just going through traffic alone, like down 7th Avenue at night, is one of my favorite things to do. And it's in the midst of traffic. Like, it's like a current just carrying you. You have to keep up, and it keeps pushing you.
And if you don't keep up, like you said, then that's when it gets dangerous.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, then
you have to become part of that mm-hmm. flow, or yeah. else you're gonna really bite it,
yeah.
I think.
So tell us about your running group and what you guys do.
My running group is Orchard Street Runners, based out of the Lower East Side. We're very small. We kind of do our thing differently than some other running groups. Some running groups are, you know, involve social interaction and like doing things, and I don't even know how to describe it. My group is about running. It's about just kind of like going fast and being competitive within our own group. It's almost like a race every Tuesday night. Mm. You know, it's about pushing each other and about running sixes or fives or sevens or whatever your goals are, and just kind of like pushing as far as you can for as long as you can. You know, it's kind of creating its own identity as it goes. It's in its infancy, and it's just starting out. So we're kind of finding our way, but we're just trying to do things for the community. And we recently did a fundraiser for the Girls Club, Lower East Side Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge success. We made over $7,000 in about 3 hours for them doing a silent auction.
Wow.
Yeah. Which was, it was really fun.
That's really impressive. That yeah. is very, very cool.
But we have some big plans coming up for spring and summer. We're going to put on our first race, which is going to be an underground midnight half marathon.
Cool.
Going from Lower East Side to Red Hook and then cool. back. Details are being worked out now, but it's
going to... Can people keep up with you online? Do you have a site or a blog or anything where people can...
I do, but I don't maintain it. It's just
I don't
kind
blame
of,
you.
Yeah. I kind of tweet things here and there, but it's mostly dealing with the people I see directly.
Yeah.
And we try to keep it to word of mouth.
Yeah. That's cool.
Keep it small.
That's very know. Cool. All right. Orchard Street Runners. Well, Tuesday nights, you know.
Tuesday nights, 6:30, we meet at Lost Weekend, which is 45 Orchard,
mm-hmm.
just above Hester. And we leave at 7 o'clock promptly. We don't wait for anybody, so.
And how long are your runs, generally?
It depends on the crew. We'll do a minimum of 5.5 miles, mm-hmm. As many as 10, if everybody's up for it.
Yep.
And we just kind of project the route onto the wall and just kind of figure it out as we go. And then we leave. And that's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very simple. We try to keep it grassroots style.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Well, so what are you going to be involved with the Red Hook Criterium again next year?
I hope so.
Develop the racing part even more?
I would love to get the experience. What Trimble's done in 5 years is pretty substantial and mm-hmm. amazing. And I would like to gain whatever knowledge I can from him so I can start doing my own races as well, in addition with working with him. I think he's going to get involved in the half, the midnight half, but I don't want to speak on his behalf at
okay.
this point.
Okay, cool. And when did you say that's going to take place?
My birthday, May 31st.
Good birthday present.
Yeah. I figure it's a good excuse to have a party.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming out to Roberta's to talk with us about this. It was really fun. I mean, it all came together really fast. I met you and we talked about, you know, getting you guys some cheese for the race. And then the actual experience of going was so fun.
I can't thank you enough. The contribution for the Preems was amazing. And they ended up being, from what Pavel said, one of the guy who organizes the running portion, they were the best Preems of the entire time, the crit's been in existence, and it's because people were willing to donate, and I really appreciate your donation and contribution. It was awesome.
Awesome. Well, you know, people need cheese to keep going after you're like, you know, out there doing crazy, crazy stuff.
Absolutely.
Nothing like a big wedge of Cabot cloth bound cheddar.
I was hoping you remembered the name because I forgot.
Yeah. we're going to post some stuff too on the Heritage Radio website. Pictures. I took a short video of the cycling race. So if anybody's curious, you can also check it out at heritageradionetwork.com. Yep. But you can also Google Red Hook Criterium and learn more about everything that David Trimble and his crew is up to. So thanks again. It's really fascinating to learn about this whole new world. And even though it's not really cheese related, it's good to know that cheese fuels, you know, the participants. So,
yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back next Monday with, another episode. We're going to be talking about the meat side of the goat coin. We talked about, yes. The dairy side last week, and we're going to follow up talking about goat meat and how that plays into goat dairy.
Yep. So it's part two.
Join us again next Monday on Cutting the Curd.
Bye.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.